Welcome again to the Ask Beanie Show. And it's not just the Beatles that are trying to convince us that it is so important when our lives are out of sort and when we feel that we are on a never-ending roller coaster ride or merry-go-round ride that is not really a fun ride. And I'm hoping today is the Ask Beanie Show 271 shows. And I would love to be able to talk with all of you who've listened to the show and who've gone to the archives over the past number of years and see, really find out what the impact has been on you. Because people are having a really difficult time in their lives. I mean, we're looking at the depression statistics. 16 million adults in the United States are suffering from clinical depression, and that translates into 1 in 5 Americans. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. So the fact is whether or not we're having depression issues or anxiety problems or relationship issues or substance abuse problems or sexual problems or all kinds of other stressors in our lives, when we're finding that our lives are really out of control, there are a couple of questions that we need to ask ourselves, whether or not we are going to continue to lament the current state of affairs, or whether or not we are willing to actually do something about it. And of course, the reality is, and I've been practicing now as a psychotherapist and sex therapist for over 35 years. And of course, I would honestly say that nobody has ever called in all the years and said, Beanie, we need some communication or problem solving help. I think that typically people wait much, much, much too long, whether or not they're dealing with depression or whether or not they're having couples issues. So what I'm hoping to be able to do is to convince you, you don't need to wait that long and you don't need to navigate this world on your own. And frequently just reaching out and getting a second opinion, of course, from a qualified person. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of opinions about a lot of different things. But of course, if you are wanting to connect with a therapist, you also really need to do your homework. And please don't just go to the internet and look at the reviews and Google the people and see how many positive reviews that they may have. I think that what you need to do is, if you're actually planning to see a therapist, what I always encourage people to do is to give me a call. I'll have a very, very brief conversation on the phone. And then we talk about coming in for a consultation. And it's really important that the chemistry is really good. And I'm not talking about sexual chemistry, of course, that the chemistry is really good and that you feel that it's a good fit, even though initially when people are coming in, they're nervous, they're scared, they don't know at all what to expect. In fact, it was very interesting. I had a new male patient last week, a 23-year-old young man who was having a lot of relationship difficulties. And I thought it was just such a coup for a young man of that age to give himself permission and reach out and ask for help. So we talked about his relationship history and basically all of the women who he had dated, and he'd had a couple of serious relationships. They were all women who were really very, very unavailable to him. And when I was talking about his family of origin, he also had a mom. He had a mom who was also emotionally very, very unavailable. And I was, you know, just questioning whether or not there may be a link, that this is what he got used to, women who were not there for him, women who were really distant and just not as loving as we all deserve to have in our relationships. And of course, I uh, I went very, very gently, and at the end of the hour, I could see that he was very perplexed. He did not want to really delve into his own psyche. What he preferred to do instead, he told me he wanted to get married and he wanted to have children. And he thought that everything was just going to work out okay if only he found the right woman. And of course, I hear this all the time, that we're all looking for the right partner. But the reality is, of course, is that we need to be okay and that we need to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and as best as we possibly can. We need to deal with our own skeletons in the closet and our own unfinished business so that the relationship is really going to be, and I say this all the time, the relationship is going to be the icing on the cake and we're going to be solid. We are going to have clarity about who we are and what we want and what we don't want and what we need. And I knew at the end of the session, I had a sense that he was not going to return. And okay, he's only 23, and hopefully, you know, he's going to rethink his decision about getting some help. And there was serious anxiety and some depression. And yet, I guess readiness is also a factor. You know, some people will think that they're really ready to tackle issues, to tackle problems in their lives, whether or not it's financial or whether or not it is relational. And but you can't force anyone. I mean, I've learned this over the years that I can't want more for my patients. I can't want more for people than they actually want for themselves. So it's timing. And the reality is that people typically, at least this has been my experience, they really need to bottom out. And I wish over the years that there'd been a way to find a way to fast forward the process before people were in a really, really bad place before they would give themselves permission and reach out and ask for help. And I think what we're seeing on television vision is that we're seeing more programs that are dealing with relationships. Couples therapy is one program where couples are coming in and working with a real live therapist on Showtime. We see shows like The Affair, so that we're really delving, and I think it's a really positive thing, more and more into the world of psychology and into the world of relationships. But really getting back to you is that if you are not in a good place, if you're finding that your life and your relationships are not at all what you would hoped they would be, we have an opportunity every single day. We can't change history, but we do have an opportunity to work through our old issues and our what I call unfinished business of various different kinds, including abuse and sexual abuse. And so that we're then able to finally wake up in the morning and be really present. And that is the process. That is really the process. I wish that I could tell you that we could just change our minds and change our attitudes and that everything was going to be okay. And there's certainly a place for that in our lives. And I think it's important that, you know, as the Nike logo, it's just do it. I think we do need to do a lot more positive things and not just talk about things and ruminate about things and philosophize about things. But if we're finding that there are blocks, the doing it in itself is not going to do the trick. And that has been absolutely my experience. So I hope that I convince you. I hope that I convince all of you who listen to the show is that when things get a little tough and you don't know what's going on and you don't know how to get out of the hole, that you will definitely give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. And, you know, I talk about, and of course, Gary Null talks about this every single day, about tips to improve our life when it comes to diet, when it comes to nutrition. And people, what I have found, we make a lot of excuses. We make a lot of excuses why we can't exercise. We make a lot of excuses why we don't eat fruits and vegetables. And again, it is about doing what is really in our best interest. And the research is clear on so much of this. It's so clear about nutrition. And yet I think that I'm not sure whether it's just laziness. You know, Gary talks about intentional ignorance and intentional neglect, so that we know a lot of things, and yet there always seem to be excuses why we can't exercise and we can't eat well. And this is where, if you feel like you're just kind of going around and around, you really need to be mindful and you really need to stop and look at your life and look at the relationships, to look at the money situation in your life, to look at careers and business and personal growth, and see what kinds of things do you want to recreate or create in your life. Your health, your relationships, free time. I think that so many people were just so stressed out, and people tend to, you know, work a great deal. And of course, people, many, many people do need to work a lot. And yet, trying to find a balance, trying to find a reasonable balance is really the challenge. And yet, if we don't, we end up suffering a lot emotionally and psychologically and also physically. And when you look at the blocks in your life, you know, and I wish that, you know, I could talk with you right now and that you could respond right now. You know, I wonder, like, what are you afraid of? You see that things are not going well. Let's just say in your relationship. So what are you afraid of in terms of trying to tackle things? Saying to your partner, listen, darling, I love you very much, assuming that you do. And things have been off. Things have been off with us for a while, and I want to talk with you about it. Now, hopefully you're going to have a partner who's willing to say, look, I've been maybe feeling the same way. I haven't known how to deal with it. And yet it is so important that the more we deny and the more we avoid and the more we stuff issues and problems in a drawer, I think that the fantasy and the hope is that somehow the problems are going to disappear, you know, on their own, as if there's going to be a magic genie who arrives in our lives and says that everything is going to be okay without tackling issues head on. And all I can tell you is that in my life, that's certainly not been the experience. It hasn't been the experience personally, and it has also never been the experience professionally either. You know, and I'm looking at all the articles, more and more articles, even in the New York Times, talking about exercise. A new study offers both hope and a subtle nudge to anyone who has slacked off on exercise. It's never too late to start exercising. Another piece from the Harvard Health Publishing, Harvard Medical School. Exercise is an all-natural treatment to fight depression. So we are trying to encourage people more and more and more to do what is in their best interest. There was a terrific piece also in the New York Times about tennis. And of course, as you all know, I am a tennis player. I was number 10 in Canada as a junior, and I play a lot of tennis. Find a partner to share the sweat. Studies show there was a 2017 study of more than 80,000 British men and women. And the study found that those who played racket sports tended to outlive those who jogged. That's kind of interesting, but I think it's more than just the sport. It's more than just the exercise. It is the camaraderie that we experience. And it is. There's a tremendous high when you go out to the tennis courts and you have people to talk to so that you're not living in isolation. Because we know from a lot of research that social support provides stress mitigation. So being with other people, playing and interacting with them as you do when you play games that require a partner or a team probably has unique psychological and physiological effects, amplifying the benefits of exercise. You know, so again, the sense of community, the sense of socialization is just so important. And here was another. It's really terrific, I think, that the New York Times in their Well section, they're talking a lot about the importance of exercise. There's a new study. It reveals gains when people shift toward ambling for even an extra hour daily. So here was a study. The researchers, they now wound up with data covering 36,000 middle-aged or older men and women from the United States, Britain, or Europe who had worn an accelerator for several days. And the data also covered each participant's general health, body mass, smoking, history, and other life aspects. So what did they find? Well, overall, the researchers found someone's chance of dying prematurely continued to drop the more he or she moved, up to a plateau at about 25 minutes per day of moderate exercise, such as brisk walking or 100 minutes a day of light gentle activity. So we have the data. We know what works and we know what doesn't work. And of course, what I try to do every week here on the Ask BD show is to encourage you to be mindful and actually engage in activities and engage in relationships that are in your best interest. And of course, that's what I tell my patients every single time a patient comes to see me at the end of the visit. We've talked, we've looked at the issues. I want to leave them with something that they can really hold on to. So the homework, and I'm a believer in homework, is that you look very, very carefully and honestly at how you are navigating your days and how you are actually navigating your relationships. So when somebody is going to have a bag of chips or when somebody is going to consume a lot of sugar, I want you to be aware that things like that are not in your best interest, and to have something just jog your mind when you're going into the store and you're going to have that extra sugar, that perhaps you can have an apple or perhaps you can have something that will actually be in your best interest. And this also extends to people and relationships and colleagues and, of course, lovers and family members as well, to look at our lives. And I used to ask people to do this once a year, you know, with the new year, coming upon us. But now I ask you to do this every single week. I want you to be aware. I want you to be mindful of what actually works for you and what does not work for you. And we all have, and it's a normal kind of thing to have ups and downs in all of our relationships. But if you're finding that the relationships that you're engaging in, and that includes family members as well, are really toxic, and that almost every single time that you're engaging with certain people, that you feel bad, that you feel disrespected, and you ask yourself, why in the world am I wasting my time? Am I spending my time with people who hurt me and people who don't treat me in the way that I deserve to be treated? Then you have decisions that we need to make. I mean, obviously, with all relationships, certainly all relationships that are important to us, it is important to try to work things out. I'm not suggesting that there's never going to be any drama. I'm not suggesting that there will not be ups and downs and difficulties and conflict in all of our relationships. But hopefully in our personal relationships, we need to be very mindful when we are actually assessing who is right for us and who's wrong for us, that the person that we love, the person that we have this strong attachment to, is somebody who is a great communicator and a great problem solver. And that's something that I see in my practice. I see a lot of couples who have actually never learned, and most of us, of course, never learned the art of emotional communication and problem solving. So it's not about discarding people, but it's making sure in our lives that the people who we are connected to, the people who we spend time with, where there is harmony and where there is mutuality and where there is reciprocity. I mean, I had a very interesting situation very, very recently where a woman was dating this man, and it's been about a year relationship. And she's fallen into an old, old pattern. And her pattern has been where the men control her. They tell her what to do. She feels that she does not deserve, you know, to have her needs met. And this is yet again another relationship where the old patterns have actually started to surface again. And I pointed this out to her because, of course, she's feeling depressed. She's feeling angry. She's feeling upset. And I was reminding her a couple of days ago that this is sort of old news. And I was actually triggering her. I wanted her to start to feel some anger toward her boyfriend, who was really very, very emotionally abusive and distant and had all of these kinds of expectations and was telling her what she should wear and how she should clean the house and how she should walk the dog. And it was just becoming very, very overwhelming for her. And what happened, it was great. At the end of the session, we did a role play. And I said, okay, I'm going to be your boyfriend and you're going to be you. And I want you to try to find the words and the way to let him know how disappointed and how hurt you have been feeling about the way he has been treating you. And this was a very, very risky thing for this woman. She has never in all of her relationships been able to express her needs and to be able to say, listen, this is not okay. This is really okay. So that the role that she actually adopted in her life, beginning in her own family of origin, was really the role of a doormat. And I have been trying over the years to get her to really love herself and recognize that she has needs and that people should not be allowed to cross over certain lines. So we did a couple of practice role plays, and she actually called me last night. And she said, Beattie, she said, I did it. She said, I think I did it well. I told him exactly how I was feeling. And I said, well, what was his reaction? And she said, well, he was shocked. I said, did he apologize for all of these things. I mean, there's just been so much disrespect and a real sense of entitlement and privilege that this woman was just going to be running around like his maid. She said no. So he was out of town, and they were going to be getting together today, and I am going to be seeing her tomorrow, and I'm very, very curious to see what the upshot of this conversation was. And in certain ways, it doesn't really matter what his response is going to be. What matters is, what really mattered, is that this woman finally gave herself permission to ask for what she wants. So I'm asking you, are there situations right now in your life, whether or not it's at work or whether or not it's with a family member or a friend or a lover or a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Do you find that you have been hanging back and that you have things that you need to say, and out of fear and worry and perhaps shyness about what the consequences and what the ramifications are going to be, that you have really been hanging back? And I'm sure in all of our lives, there are people from time to time where we do have some unfinished business. Now, we cannot take any responsibility for how they are going to respond. The only thing that we can do is do what we need to do to take our power, or to take back our power, and to communicate in the best possible way how we're feeling about the situation, how we're feeling hurt, how we're feeling disappointed. And of course, I don't suggest you do this when you were running out to work in the morning or just before you're going to be going to sleep at night. And this is really true. The how to say it and where to say it, when to say it, if to say it, and how to do all of these things well. And that is what effective emotional communication and problem solving is really all about. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we all had learned this when we were young children? You know, I keep saying that the schools have always had a major, major opportunity. Now, most, of course, haven't taken on the role, and we know the priorities, the history and the math, and even gym seems to be a subject that is going by the wayside in many, many public schools. But the fact that we didn't learn it early on does not mean at all that it is ever too late to begin to take control of your life. And it was interesting too. I had a patient over the weekend, and she also was basically communicating the same thing as this other woman was. She grew up in a family where her needs were absolutely, absolutely just put away. Her parents, they had a number of other children, and she learned early on that her needs were unimportant and that she was unimportant. So what did she do throughout her life? What she did is that she became the helper. She became the person who was going to help everybody, regardless of how they treated her, so that she would feel that she was important in some way. So what she's done throughout most of her life, and she's starting to change now, and I'm so, so proud of her, she too became a doormat. People realized that she would always be available to help, regardless of the fact how these people treated her. Many treated her as a maid. Many treated her with very, very little respect. In fact, more disdain than respect. And here she is at 64 years of age, and she is finally learning to set some boundaries and to learn to say no. and to look at the people, in her life and make some decisions about who's going to stay and who perhaps needs to go, who she needs to extricate herself from because they are not people that are really adding anything to her life, but rather they are really diminishing. They are diminishing the quality of her life. So this is not an easy thing to kind of do, but it's about being willing to be honest with ourselves about our lives, about our relationships. And again, if things are not working, then we need to make some decisions about what we are going to do, if anything. And there are many, many people who don't make decisions that are in their best interest, and they go along and they take on the role of victim. And all I can do, certainly as a psychotherapist and somebody who's now hosted the Ask Petey Show on the Progressive Radio Network for a number of years, and I'd actually hosted many, many call-in counseling shows prior to living in New York City. But all we can do is encourage people. And in the final analysis, you know, people have to make decisions about how they want to live their lives physically and emotionally and in their relationships. But I want you to know that there are always, always options. And, you know, there have been situations over the years, you know, where people have had significant, significant problems who've come into therapy with me. And you wonder, are they going to be able to work things out? Are they going to be able to do the work in order to improve the quality of their lives and relationships? And it's like a race. Either you're going to stay in the game and work it through, and hopefully you're going to have a really good coach to help you work through and to navigate all of the issues that are not working for you, or you're going to bail. And bailing on yourself has incredible, incredible consequences emotionally and psychologically and, of course, physically. So hopefully I really am able to convince you that when things are off, find a good therapist, find somebody who can help you get another perspective on what's going on or not going on in your life. And it's absolutely amazing how wonderful life can be when we are not bogged down with all the problems and all the issues that up to this present time get in the way of our well-being. There was a piece in the New York Times that I really wanted to talk about with you. And this was a piece written by Lori Gottlieb. And Lori Gottlieb, she's a psychotherapist and an author, and she's actually just come out with a book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, and it happens to be a wonderful, wonderful book. So this is the piece. How much should you know about your therapist's life? And I was reading this, and this is what she says at the beginning of the article. She says, when I was starting out as a therapist, a colleague told me what was intended to be a cautionary tale. After suffering a series of miscarriages, she was in Starbucks when her doctor called with the news that her pregnancy wasn't viable. Standing at the counter, she burst into heaving sobs, and a patient of hers happened to walk in, saw her hysterically crying therapist, walked out the door, canceled her next appointment, and never went back. You're not going to keep writing now that you're a therapist, right? She said, more a statement than a question. So the thing is this, how much do you want to know about your therapist's life, and how much should your therapist, how much should we as therapists disclose about our lives? Well, I'll tell you, with my particular patients over the years, I have been very, very open about my life. Of course, these days, all we need to do is Google. And if you certainly go to bdcone.com on my website, you'll find out all kinds of things, primarily professional things about my life. But I want people to know me. And we're not talking about going into a lot of details about the ups and downs that we all experience in life. But I want people to know that I am a human being and not just somebody who has gone to school. And yes, I went to McGill and I have a master's degree in clinical social work and postgraduate specialization in marriage and family therapy and sexual dysfunction. And yes, I've been doing this for 35 years. And yes, I'm an author. There's more that I want people to know about me. I'm very happily married. And I think that's important. I think it's really important that people know. And I've also said to people that I too have had my ups and downs in relationships, and that I certainly wish that I had known years and years ago what I have learned over the years about relationships, about the importance of assessing who your partner is and isn't, you know, before committing to any serious relationship, which is, of course, why I did my research and why I did the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I want people, and I want you to know that after my graduate and postgraduate training at McGill, that I worked in the inner city areas. I worked with kids. I worked with immigrants, people from all over the world. I remember walking into so many homes where at the end of the month, food was really an issue. They were waiting for the welfare checks. And it was not because these people did not want to work. So I have dealt with people from every single walk of life, beginning in the school social services world in Greater Montreal. And again, I think it's important that you know that your therapist has had a broad range of experience. It isn't just sitting in a cushy office, because I've been in private practice now for about 35 years. But prior to that, I did my due diligence, and I think that it was something that has only helped me greatly as a therapist. I mean, just working with people from different cultures, from different countries, people who were gay, people who were trans. I remember that I had a couple of transgender patients in Providence, Rhode Island, and it was a really interesting experience. They were the first two people, trans people, that I had worked with. And of course, there were the issues of the surgery and coming out, and one person, their family completely rejected him. The other person, the family completely embraced her as she was going through the transition. But I want people to know who I am. I want them to understand. And of course, you know, when you're choosing a therapist, all therapists are certainly not alike. I want people to know that for me, I'm not a believer in bandage therapy. I want people to know that when they come to me, we are going to start at the beginning. We are going to look at family of origin issues. We are going to look at the roots of the problem, and it's going to be a process, and it's going to be serious. So again, you know, I'd be curious to hear how much you would want to hear about your therapist's life. And because, you know, therapists, we're just we're just people. We have conflict. We have difficulties. We have ups. We have downs. And hopefully, as therapists, we've given ourselves permission to do whatever it is that we need to do to get our lives on track so that we are not going to in any way contaminate the therapeutic process because of our own problems. And, you know, people wonder. I mean, people will ask me questions about my own life and my own career. I was the executive director of a Jewish family service agency in Canada, and that was a wonderful experience. And what I learned about that was that I did not want to be, and I did that for several years, that I did not want to be an executive director and have to be concerned about budgets and boards. And for me, my great love is doing psychotherapy and sex therapy. And of course, I love to do the Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I really enjoy public speaking. I go around the country. And actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Florida at the University of South Florida talking about how to never make a mistake in love again. So I like to perform. But my passion professionally is definitely the psychotherapy and sex therapy that I do in my office. So for me, the self-disclosure part is something that I feel is natural, and it's something that I feel very, very comfortable with. Well, there was another article that I wanted to talk with you about. Last week, I had a telephone session with a woman who is in an extraordinarily toxic, destructive, horrible marriage. And she was telling me how her husband puts her down and calls her names and gaslights her and doesn't touch her and there's no affection. And they've only been married for a couple of years and there's also no sex. And he sex younger women and he's very open about it and doesn't think it's a problem. So we were having this conversation, and this is actually a new patient. And I'm very honest. I'm very pragmatic with people. I said, look, I don't understand what it is about this particular man who you're married to, and it's, you know, for a relatively short period of time, you claim to love. What is it? What is it that you actually love about this man who treats you in such a disgusting way? Well, she didn't have an answer. Yes, she likes the lifestyle. They have a plane. They go to parties. They travel around the world. Of course, she was able to do that before she married this particular man. So I pulled out an article for her, and this was an article that was in Psychology Today. Your Relationship Bill of Rights. And I really, really love this particular piece. So, there are some fundamental measures of respect that each of us is entitled to in a romantic relationship. Well, I would say in all relationships. Expectations that form a baseline for long-term success and whose absence may doom a couple's prospects. So it says, we find these seven to be inalienable. So here we go. This is the couple's bill of rights. So when we enter into long-term relationships and certainly marriages, we may keep in mind a list of the things we'd like to get from and one hopes are willing to give a partner, right? What we want to need, what we don't want to need, and describe my relationship. And of course, that's chapter 10 in my book, after you've gone through my assessment process. So yes, we need to be very clear about what we want and what we don't want. Expectations are essential. And if you're not expecting good stuff, then you very likely won't get it. We need to be honest with ourselves about what things are essential for us to get through the marriage. Focus on those things and let the other things go. And this is why I am so committed after all these years to the 10-step formula that I devised, which culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is an assessment process. It doesn't sound sexy. It doesn't sound romantic. But it really gets the reader to really look at all of the different key ingredients that need to be present in a relationship if the relationship is going to succeed. You know, making sure that there's no abuse of any kind, making sure that the communication and the problem solving is really great. And if it's not, the question then becomes, what are we, what are you going to do about it? Looking at things like emotional intimacy, caring, sharing, respect, trust, gratitude, and all of these things, by the way, you are not going to discover in a week or in 2 months or in 90 days. In fact, it's so interesting. When I did the research, I was actually a little surprised that the accurate assessment really needed about a year to find out who your partner was and who your partner was not. Because I think in the beginning, everything is really great and where are we going to go for dinner? But as the couple and as the relationship begins to move forward, there are going to be issues, there's going to be problems. And that's when we are all able to see the reality of what is going on and what is not working for us in relationships. And, you know, I've mentioned many, many times that in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you're ever going to find. I want everything yesterday, but, you know, professionally, I'm probably one of the most patient people that you're ever going to meet. And I wish that there was a way that we would be able to fast forward this assessment process. But the reality is that we really do need to play it out. And the research that I did with 450 people, it really was so, so, so clear that it was going to take about a year to find out who your partner was or was not. So I want to get into some of the specifics in the Relationship Bill of Rights. Number one, you have the right to your partner's attention. Your partner's attention is likely to improve your satisfaction with a relationship, whether it's spontaneous, like an unexpected afternoon text that makes you smile, or in response to your requests. So if you are in a relationship right now, do you feel that you get enough attention from your partner? Now, if you don't, have you expressed it? I need more touching. It would be great if you called me during the day. It would be terrific if you sent a text, or it would be wonderful if you sent an email, because people are not mind readers. So we have to ask for what we want. We don't always get exactly what we want, but if we don't ask, we're certainly not going to get. Number two, you have the right to a partner who will try to work out your differences. And this is where, you know, I talk about this all the time, the importance of emotional communication and problem solving. And I think that we are typically, we're not students of emotional communication and problem solving. And I think that the majority of people, particularly when problems arise, we either tend to avoid, we tend to deny, We may hit the dog. Hopefully we'll never hit our dogs. But people find it very, very difficult to sit down and say, listen, you know, I'm upset about this and I would like to talk with you about it. Is this a good time? And to be able to find the way and find the words to be able to communicate well. And if you find in your own relationship that this is not working, it's not working on your own, then this is a terrific reason to reach out to a couples therapist who will be able to help you develop the skill, because that is really what it is. I mean, if we were lucky, most of us would have maybe learned in our own family of origins the ABCs of effective communication and problem solving. However, I would say that the majority of us, we were not fortunate in learning that particular skill. So it is. It's like tennis. It's like any sport. It's like any endeavor where it requires a teacher in order to help you to develop the skill. Because remember that all long-term relationships encounter sore spots and closets, you know, and conflicts. And if anybody tells you we never argue, we never disagree, I mean, you can really take this with a grain of salt, because I don't believe it. Because ignoring the problems is not going to make them go away, even if partners do so, because they sincerely don't want to pick a fight. See, the other thing that happens is that we tend to stuff the issues. So you have this long laundry list of problems that have not been acknowledged and addressed and resolved. And a lot of people will say, well, he should know or she should know the way I am feeling and the way I am thinking. And trust me, I don't care how long you've been with somebody. Do not assume. We should never really assume anything that our partners know how we feel and know when we're upset if we don't find the words and the way to say it. And I think that with all the couples that I've seen over the years, it's not that I think, I know, people have waited for years and years before addressing problems that may have occurred even before they married. Number three, you have the right to a partner who will share the load. And again, this has to do with communication and problem solving. So that if you feel that your partner is not doing enough or that you're doing too much, this is a conversation. This is a conversation where you have communication, and this is a conflict resolution kind of a conversation that you want to be having, where there's going to be discussion, where there's going to be compromise, where there's going to be trade-offs. I'll do this if you do that because you don't want to do this. So, okay, we can trade tasks. And you're always wanting to look for a win-win resolution, if at all possible. And here was another one, and certainly when I was talking to this woman and her husband hasn't touched her in about a year and a half, as he is busily sexting all these other women and she still is looking the other way and is getting physically sicker and sicker by the week. You have the right to honesty about sex. And people still find this so, so difficult to talk about, particularly when there are issues in the bedroom. And I really advise you, don't let these conversations go. You also have the right to affection. And we need to ask for it. And you can start by giving more affection to your partner, assuming that you have not got drawers and drawers filled of unfinished business and upsets and disappointments. You have the right to the benefit of the doubt. Relationships flourish when couples attribute the best of intentions to each other all the time. And you have the right to gratitude. Partners who are grateful for each other, studies have shown, feel more satisfied in the relationship. And even when just one partner feels gratitude, whether on an existential level or for simpler things like being brought a favorite drink, both benefit. So if you start doing nice things and your partner picks up on it and feels appreciated, it should inspire their own good feelings. And these are really, really important things. And you have to, you know, honestly look at your own relationships, and hopefully you have most of the, if not all of these things that are present. But if you don't, like many, many of my patients, it really deserves an honest conversation with your partner, and ignoring and denying and avoiding and stuffing your upsets and your disappointments into a drawer. All I can tell you is that it is not going to help to resolve the problems in your life. And this is why I would say my mantra, if there was one mantra that I want to really communicate to you and convince you to also internalize, the mantra is to acknowledge, address, and resolve the issues as best as you can, with or without help. And if you need the help, do not hesitate to reach out. It can change your life. It can change your relationships forever. So I think we're actually at the end of another Ask Beady show, and I hope that some of the things, if not all of the things that I've said, have been helpful to you, and that there's some little thing that you can take away and say, I'm going to try something different today. And then I'd love for you to let me know if that actually worked. There is a voicemail line here at the Progressive Radio Network. You can actually leave messages, or you can leave me questions, and I'd be able to and be happy to tackle them next week on the Ask Beady Show. The voicemail line number is 862-800-6805. So don't be shy. And of course, you can always call the show live, and we can have a conversation, and we can discuss, and we can debate everything and anything that you would like to talk about. So again, everybody, I want to thank you all so much for listening every week, and for sending me texts and emails, and I really wish you the best